bit of refueling for them, because they're both working very hard right now, and we're winding, not winding down per se, but we're getting towards the final sprint. We have, this week was the committee week deadline, and so all the bills that have come over to our House side from the Senate have been dealt with. If they haven't been dealt with in committee, then they're not going forward. And there's a good number of bills that they just get weaned, all of them get weaned along the way. And so some of the bills that perhaps some listeners were concerned about have been left to die.
Yeah. So, but this is an opportunity. That's the process, and I know typically, on average, it's somewhere, I don't know, 50 to 60% of the bills that are you start with at the beginning of the legislative season don't get this far.
Yeah, I would say greater than 60% don't get this far. And then I would point out we have two more weeks before to finish the floor deadline of the bills that we received from the Senate, and likewise on the Senate from the House. And then going forward from that, we'll have conference committee, and then we'll really be taking care of the budget those last few weeks. It is everybody's goal to end early, save the taxpayers money by ending session early, but that doesn't always happen. Everything is a fluid, and that's just our hope. So, but Charlie, since it's myself today, I brought in some information and wanted to talk about a few topics more at length than what I normally get to do. And so if you don't mind, I'll get started right away. The first thing I want to talk about is the opportunity I have to serve as a legislative liaison to the governor's international team. Mm-hmm. And I've made reference to this in the past, but this week was just a big event in that regard, because we had the International Student Awareness Day at the Capitol, for which I serve as the host for that event. And so, you know, we have a great event. We bring some people in, lots of people set up booths, and we had some fabulous entertainment. This is all non-appropriated. This is money. So this is the international community coming together, celebrating their presence, letting their presence be known here in Oklahoma, especially to legislators. And here I just brought a few talking points that I can let the listeners know about.
Okay.
Because of Oklahoma's international presence, we have a large number of exports from Oklahoma to the nations that support over 36,000 jobs in Oklahoma, which is just an amazing number, I think. And then as foreigners invest in Oklahoma businesses, they've helped create 46,000 jobs. And so this is an effort that is a good effort on behalf of the governor's international team, and they continue to foster those international relationships. In particular, in terms of students, we have close to 10,000 international students studying in Oklahoma temporarily, and that actually puts Oklahoma fairly high in the list of per capita places to come and study if you're living abroad and looking for a place in America to study. And what I always tell students when I meet them, I say, you are getting a very authentic American experience. Not that living in New York City or living in one of the larger Texas or California cities isn't American, not that at all. It's just that in those places, you can very easily become isolated within a community of immigrants or within a community of expats, mm-hmm. who are in those areas, and consequently not get as much of an opportunity to taste and experience American culture, American families, American traditions. In fact, I have one, a good friend of mine who's a Korean American, who had his parents come and visit from Korea, and they never felt like they were in America until they got to Oklahoma. Because their perception of America was that it was wide open prairie, that there were cowboys running around and ranchers, and when they got to Oklahoma, they finally got a sense that, oh, this is America.
It is nice to meet those expectations.
It is nice to meet those expectations, and it's something that we can be proud of in Oklahoma. The spirit of hospitality, I think, is shown very well and reflects well upon our state. And so this past Monday, we had that event. It highlighted the contributions that they make. And I would argue that as we show our hospitality and invest in these relationships, they're going to yield further investment into our state for generations to come. And so that's I'm very much a pleasure to help with that, facilitate that. This past weekend was the Tulsa Global Alliance hosted its large international business fair, and so that has now come to a conclusion. But one of the things I've talked about in various community groups, as I've presented on our exchange with Israel, Tulsa is a sister city with Tiberias, mm-hmm. which is Tiberias is right on the Sea of Galilee in Israel, and it hosts a lot of the groups that go and travel to Israel, and that's the starting point from which groups go out and visit Caesarea. It's where they go out and visit the Mount of Beatitudes and where Jesus fed the 5,000, which those two places are very close to each other, and it's also close to what they call the Jesus Boat Museum, which was a boat that archaeologists, or not archaeologists, two kibbutz members found as they were out in the Sea of Galilee, and that was brought into restoration and put into a museum, and they believe it's a boat from the time of when Jesus and the disciples were there on the Sea of Galilee.
Well, and of course, OK Mozart, throughout its history, many years has celebrated the Oklahoma-Israel exchange musically. So,
yes, sir, it has. The Israeli Philharmonic has made its presence known here in Oklahoma and in Bartlesville in particular. So that is a wonderful privilege that I get to serve. I serve at the speaker's pleasure, but as the legislative liaison to the governor's international team, and I hope that we just continue to foster those relationships, and that I'm able to play a role in that on behalf of our state, on behalf of our district as well. But let me move on. I want to talk at length about the Family Promise Bill, is what we call it amongst our legislative delegation. This is Senate Bill 1329, and it was started by Senator Ford, and it came because of a situation here in the community. And I'm sure many of the listeners are aware, but let me just go ahead and tell the backstory. Because of the growing population of transient persons here in the Bartlesville and Dewey area, and by transient, I mean people who are not in a permanent housing situation. Because of that growing population, the church here in Bartlesville, and by church I mean the greater community of Christians, has done what the church universally has done throughout its history, which is find a way to meet those needs and to help people with their housing situation. And they found, as they were beginning their research and figuring out what to do about this, an organization called Family Promise. And that's why it's called the Family Promise Bill. Family Promise is an organization that currently has close to 200 affiliates in 41 different states. Bartlesville would be in one of those affiliates now. And as it has gone about getting started, it's worked with the Affordable Housing Coalition here in Bartlesville, and it has decided to recruit the churches and set up this program to help homeless families. Now, let me tell you the model that it uses, because I've had the opportunity to tell the story of Family Promise and the model that it uses at the Capitol a lot as we've worked on this legislation. Here's the model it uses. It works only with families. It's exclusive in that way. Only with families who are in transient living situations. And it takes these families and it temporarily houses them in churches 1 week at a time. And if you get 13 churches to agree to house families 1 week at a time, you can have those churches, ignite their volunteer base to come and minister to those families in the evenings when they're staying there, mm-hmm. by preparing a meal, playing with the kids, meeting some educational needs, what have you. Then during the day, Family Promise takes on the opportunity of educating them with some financial literacy, some life skills training, and those sorts of things. And so if you get 13 churches to agree to do this, and the churches host four times a year, you have every night of the year taken care of, mm-hmm. in terms of having them a place to stay. Now, because that the families are constantly moving around, every week they move to a different church, this really discourages a sense of dependency and puts a bit of a pressure on them to get into a more permanent housing situation. And because of this, and because of God's grace, and because of the ministry of the church and this organization, they have over a 70% success rate nationwide of getting families out of transient living situations and into permanent homes. Mm-hmm. And so this is just a wonderful work, something to be celebrated. There's already been graduates of this program in Bartlesville. But what has happened is that this hasn't only happened in Bartlesville. This has happened all over the nation. Local code enforcement officials have reminded churches that their buildings are not rated for overnight occupancy. And it is tempting at this point to cry foul and say that's very unreasonable. They're doing a great thing. But I have to speak up and really commend those local code enforcement officials who have brought this to everybody's attention, because they're doing their job. They are in tasks. They're entrusted with the task of protecting people as structures are built and as communities and their wishes are honored in terms of the level quality of life that we have here in Bartlesville and in this state. And so they really speak well and do a good job at what they do. And they do have an argument and a case to be made for the interpretation of their law. And so what we're trying to do with this piece of legislation, Senate Bill 1329, is to clarify the intent of the law and making sure that when you interpret the code, the building codes in the state of Oklahoma, that it can be interpreted in such a way as to make an allowance for temporary overnight accommodation in churches. And so which
helps not only Family Promise, but youth groups and other organizations that traditionally have done overnight events.
That is a wonderful point, and a point that is brought up and makes this a very easy thing to sell. And what traditionally has happened, I think, is not favorable in the sense that traditionally what has happened, this has never been addressed in legislation anywhere in the country that I know of. And what has happened is that there's just been enough pressure built up to either force local code enforcement officials to interpret the law a certain way or get them to basically turn their eye another direction. And that, I think, is not a good situation, because we're still left with this liability both on the code enforcement official mechanism and on the churches. And so this legislation aims to make a win-win situation with everybody involved. And so it has met with some I won't say resistance, but it has been met with some caution at the Capitol, and most notably with caution from fire chiefs in the state of Oklahoma. There's an association that I'm working with of 77 fire chiefs that are spread throughout the state, and they're working with me to make sure that we're doing this in a way that's safe, that they feel comfortable. And there are also other different ways that you can interpret or this issue and begin looking at the there are different lenses through which you can look at this. One of the lenses that you can look at this is through the lens of religious freedom, because I have a briefing of a case that was built going back to the history of the Christian church all the way back to the first and second centuries, where church buildings were used for this purpose. And if the case can be built that this is a fundamental practice of Christian belief, then you can really interpret it that way. But we're not trying to conflate the issue. We're just trying to say let's agree on the interpretation of the building codes that it allows for these accommodations. And so the reason I'm talking about this now and feel comfortable is because Wednesday evening, the committee passed my new version of the bill. I amended the bill extensively from the way Senator Ford started it. And what we're doing is we are defining temporary, and so that everybody can agree and be made aware that temporary accommodations does not constitute a change in the code, the building code for a church. And the way that we currently have the temporary defined in my bill is no more than seven consecutive nights and accumulating to no more than 40 nights in one calendar year. And I believe that's a reasonable way to define temporary. There are people who disagree with that, but that I think that hopefully will allow a generous, and I keep using the word allow, and I hate using that word allow, because I don't feel like it's the government's job to allow people to do things. People are allowed to do things without the government. And so I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, in a sense.
Yeah, it's a matter of just a limitation of our language, because anything else you might say as not limit or, you know, again, there's just a limited number of words that will convey the meaning that I think you're trying to get.
Yes, and I appreciate you saying that. But that's what we're moving forward. And if people are kind of following and understand what this is about, I believe it really is reasonable. And the votes so far in the Senate and in the House committee have indicated that. And so I'm confident of it going forward, which is why I finally feel comfortable talking about it here on the radio in such detail. But this just gets back to, you know, so many of the bills really gnaw at this understanding that we want to have. What is the relationship between the state and what we do as everyday normal activities? Well, in an ideal situation, we are living out our freedoms, and we're serving our God in such a way that we don't have to worry about a situation in which we're unintentionally disobedient to the state. And so I never, ever want to put a church in a situation where they're following what they believe God has called them to do, and then all of a sudden they find out, unbeknownst to them, that they're somehow operating outside the scope of law. And so that is my passion in this bill, is to make sure that churches are never in a situation where somebody can accuse them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think of the passage in I think it's 1 Peter chapter 2, I could be wrong on the letter number, and it's talking about, dear friends, as aliens and strangers in this world, live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing evil, they may see your good deeds and praise God on the day that he visits us. And so we want to have churches be in that such of a situation that there's not even a position in which somebody can point their finger and say, you're operating outside of the scope of law. And so that has become my passion with that bill. And I'm confident now we'll see it forward now that we've made it this far in the process.
I want to at least mention an event coming up Friday, 2 weeks from now, Friday, April 22nd, 7 o'clock at Oklahoma Wesleyan. Melissa McGlasson will be in concert on a fundraiser for Family Promise.
So, oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that out. So people, listeners, can really get behind this organization nationwide. It just has a phenomenal record. As I said, 41 states, close to 200 affiliates, and hopefully some of the board members are ministry supporters are listening today so they can get an idea of what's going on legislatively. But we're moving forward. We're almost to the House floor. And once we get to the House floor, I think we'll be really in good shape. So I'll move on unless you want to camp on that a little bit more.
I think we're good.
Okay. Well, the last topic I wanted to talk about, just a few updates on the budget. There has been a lot of people very concerned about what Nico Gomez, the director of health in Oklahoma, the press release that he gave about a week and a half ago at this point regarding a possible 25% reduction in Medicaid reimbursement rates. That is something that we've been responding to a lot in our office. And so I want to hear at this radio station, just let listeners know, this is not something that the House budget will allow. I can't speak for the Senate or the governor, but everybody seems to be aware of the fact that if there is that possible 25% cut in Medicare reimbursement rates, that businesses will just shut down across Oklahoma.
Yeah, and again, Medicaid reimbursement rates, which is the lowest reimbursement rate that doctors are paid. I mean, as far as any private insurance. You said Medicare once. I just wanted to make sure that it was Medicaid, which is a different program, and already a lower reimbursement rate than what the doctors get for Medicare.
Well, I'm going to blame my handwriting on that. I didn't put a high enough tail on my D there on my notes. So I wanted to let listeners know that we are aware of the implications of that, and so we've been made more powerfully aware of those implications in the last couple of weeks, and that's not something that anybody wants, and we're going to work hard to make sure that the healthcare authority is funded in such a way that that's not going to happen. And so hopefully that's a sigh of relief. Of course, everything is fluid, but just wanted to communicate that we know that that is a big issue and that we're addressing it and are aware of the consequences of any cuts to the healthcare authority. So, and then the last, I don't know how much time we have. The last thing I want to talk about is just going forward. I would love to hear from listeners. Going forward, I think that in Oklahoma, we need to start looking at the licensing that we do in Oklahoma. That has come up several times this session in different ways. And I think I'm in favor, and there's a movement amongst House members to really begin to look at the licensing in Oklahoma for different occupations and determine, are we doing things in the most effective way possible to help industry and to grow business? I was dealing with an issue this week in which on a bill in which I believe it made increase the enforcement mechanism of the state and made it a little bit more cumbersome for people to get themselves into freely entered agreements with people to manage certain things. And I'm thinking, well, if it's a free market and if you're going to enter into a free agreement, written documents, then the state can honor that, and we don't need to enforce or somehow license people to make free agreements in a free economy. And so there's just all sorts of things that get thrown before us, and you really have to step back and think, if I'm an entrepreneur, I own a business, do I really want to make people that want to get into this business or want to take on a side job or want to do something get a license to do it? And we're in that situation a lot. So there's always a balance to hit. And I know that one bill that's important for the sponsor of this show is a bill that would make sure that drones don't fly over critical infrastructure in our state. And there's been some developments on that this week. And it's just that we obviously need that relationship to be such that as issue to issue, we're doing the thing that's most reasonable, most preserving of the freedoms that we enjoy here in Oklahoma.
Okay. Well, Travis, thank you so much for your time. I know Coach is standing by with Brew and Buzz, but opportunity for us to get a great legislative update this morning. Thank you very much.
I really appreciate it, Charlie. And thanks to our sponsor, Phillips 66.
Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Travis Dunlap, with us this morning on 1400 K1. Again, brought to you by Phillips 66.
At Phillips 66 Gas, we strive to bring you the best in performance gasoline. But now we want to find the Phillips